Joe, this could take a while. The specs on the Conquis are more detailed than what I already knew, but that info won't help us much. On conditions in the quarantine zone, they provided the raw sensor data, not just their analysis. Their analysis could be wrong. I'd prefer you to draw your own conclusions anyway. If you intended that as a compliment, thank you. But, this is gonna take a while. Go, make yourself a sandwich or something. Reed and I shared a look. That is actually a good idea. An hour should be long enough? Yeah. His avatar faded out. Reed relieved the on-duty crew, gave them time to get a bite to eat before we jumped into the unknown. From experience, I knew a lot of the crew wouldn't be hungry, too keyed up from adrenaline. My stomach had the opposite reaction. I needed fuel, so I went to the galley to grab a sandwich and hurried to my cabin since that was closer to the VIP office. In my cabin, I slumped back on the couch while I ate the sandwich, regretting I hadn't taken time to add mustard to the ham. Okay, this is more than a bit weird, Skippy announced without warning and without giving a context. There are numerous references to something called the sand count that probes are measuring. The first mention of a sand count is 34,000 years after the original nano disaster. Sand? Like comet dust and that sort of thing? I suppose that could be it. The nanobots have been consuming the system's asteroid belt to make copies of themselves, and to make whatever else they are constructing in there. They would take asteroids apart, keep the elements they want, and discard the rest. That would leave a lot of dust flying around. That could be the explanation, except there are records of the dust particle concentration increasing. But that is separate from the sand count, so... Oh, wow. No. Nope. I was wrong. What? Sand refers to nanobots. Oh, like the number of nanobots per cubic kilometer or something? Good guess. Joe, if these numbers are correct, there are a shocking number of nanobots floating free inside the quarantine zone. They could be measured by cubic meter inside the orbit of what used to be the asteroid belt here. And they are both hostile and deadly. That's why the probes have been failing. They were attacked. Attacked? Those things can move on their own? Yes. Joe, we know they are using ion thrust to keep their designated stations throughout the star system. That doesn't mean they can chase and catch a freaking starship. Since no starship has been foolish enough to jump in there in a very long time, I can't predict what will happen. But you want us to do that foolish thing. We have to. We can always jump away if we get into trouble. If we're just going to jump away, we might as well not jump in. Can those things harm Valkyrie? I'm going to be honest with you. Which implies you haven't been honest until now. Are you going to listen to me or not? Go ahead. Our shields were designed to protect us against directed energy and macro-sized physical weapons like missiles and railgun darts. We mostly rely on armor plating to provide protection from space dust, so tiny nanoparticles might be able to slip through the shields. So there is no way we can... But, thanks to the incredible awesomeness of me, I can continuously retune the shields to render the nanobots incoherent. If we get pelted by anything, it will be the dead husks of nanomachines. You're sure of this? The modeling I have done is very encouraging. So you don't actually know for sure. We can test my theory for real in the quarantine zone. It's simple. If I'm wrong, we jump away and rethink our approach. He was so wrong about that. Chapter 19. Colonel Reed, we are go to proceed, I announced as I walked back onto the bridge after taking a second outside the door to check my uniform for sandwich crumbs. Aye, sir, she answered, using Navy terminology in spite of her being Air Force and me being Army. That was the new reality of DEFCOM. A recent reorganization had redefined the roles of Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. Also, the Coast Guard. They handled orbital traffic control, customs enforcement, and search and rescue. I'll say more about that reorg later. It got a lot of people upset. Confidence level? She asked quietly as I sat next to her and strapped in. We both maintained the polite fiction that by speaking quietly, the crew couldn't overhear us. The bridge wasn't the quietest compartment aboard the ship. There was air hissing out of vents, consoles beeping, and a pair of shield generators on either side of the bridge bulkhead hummed as they cycled. If someone wanted to listen to us talking, they could, even without boosting the input from their earpieces. Everyone pretended not to hear the ship's captain and task force commander talking quietly. Still, there were times when people froze, or their faces turned pale or red, depending. "Confidence is high," I replied, as I should, as that was proper procedure. Then, since my reply didn't actually give her much information, I added, "Skippy gave me a solid schmaby on this op." "Solid gold?" "Maybe gold-plated. He doesn't have a lot of info to work with." "Please don't break my ship, sir. We just got it put back together." "We won't even scratch the paint. And it's not the nanobots I'm concerned about. The problem will be finding and killing that battleship." "That thing we can handle," she said. And I knew she wasn't boasting. During the flight to Vorvestican, her crew with Bilby had wargamed fighting that battleship multiple times, and now were confident they knew how to beat it. Of course, the wargaming had been against a standard Gargellus-class battleship, not one controlled and possibly enhanced by the Outsider. The still-unknown capabilities of the Outsider, unfortunately, were wild cards we couldn't program into the wargaming model. We would just have to trust that our newly rebuilt badass battlecruiser, with assistance from Bilby and Skippy, could take on any other ship in the galaxy. "I wish someday we only had to contend with known unknowns, not the shit we couldn't ever imagine." "Fireball." I leaned toward her and whispered, "If this job was easy, they would have assigned some Navy puke to do it." "Ad Astra." She clenched a fist and whispered back the current U.S. Air Force motto. In Latin, it meant to the stars. She pointed to the pilot. "Begin jump countdown. Jump option Delta." "TTA," I muttered. "The awesomeness is with us. We are one with the awesomeness." We jumped into the unknown. "Well, shit," Skippy groaned, which is not what you want to hear from your friendly neighborhood elder AI after he has persuaded you to jump into a hazard zone. The ship's systems were still recovering from the spatial distortion of the jump. We were as vulnerable as we could be. As I opened my mouth to bitch at him, the display showed our shield generators pumping out terawatts of energy to wrap a protective field around the ship. No alarms sounded. There was no incoming fire. That we knew of. Okay, so no disaster was imminent. I should clamp down on my instinct to be angry with the beer can. Instead of "what the fuck is wrong now," I simply ask, "Something unexpected, Skippy?" "Out here, you can't expect anything. Assumptions can kill, Joe." "True. What's wrong?" "There is a planet around here somewhere, but I can't see the damn thing. Its gravity field is pointing that way." He gestured with a holographic hand, which was not real useful at the moment. "Oh, there it is. I just had to adjust my sensors. The planet is totally surrounded by a thick shell of dust and nanoparticles that are scattering the incoming sunlight. It obscures our view of the surface." "This is interesting. Give me a minute." "Skippy, we're here to find a battleship, not make a new episode of Unsolved Mysteries or whatever." "The planet itself could be a threat." "Whoa. Like the nanobots built the planet into a Starkiller base?" "Ah, Joe, you watch way too many bad movies." "Then ignore the freaking planet. Find the battleship." "We can't perform an active search for that battleship until I analyze the composition of the space around us, numbskull. The sand count here is so thick, we are plowing a streak through dust and gas and nanoparticles. I mean, you could almost water ski on the wake we're leaving behind us."
"Colonel Reed," the lead pilot called from his couch, "this dust is thick enough to slow us down by 0.02 meters per second. Should I adjust to maintain speed?"
"No," Reed decided instantly. "We are well above this rock's escape velocity, and stealth is more important than maintaining a constant speed."
We might have a bit of a problem."
Skippy's voice was pitched higher, the way he talked when he was nervous.
"Nothing we can't handle, but before our shields recovered, the hull got dusted with nanobots. The armor plating is probably okay, but those little buggers are now trying to chew on anything that is exposed."
What I wanted to do was remind him that he had told us not to worry about the nanobots. Instead, I swore at him silently while asking, "We are not going outside with a mop and bucket, so what do you suggest?"
"I can pulse the shields, draw them in tight to the hull, zap the nanobots, then bring the shields back to normal operation. The risk is that pulse will be like sending up a flare."
"That's not good."
"Eh, the gamma ray burst of our inbound jump lit up the dust around us. We couldn't conceal the effect. If the Outsider is in the area, it knows we're here."
"It can predict where we are?" Reed expressed alarm.
Pilot, increase Delta V by 60 meters per second. Come right to 039, mark 147. Engage evasive pattern level 4. Skippy, pulse the shields. Let's get this over with ASAP. I nodded approval. It was easy to plot a targeting solution on a ship coasting in a straight line through space. That's why ships in combat environments constantly change their speed and course to throw off an enemy's aim. What do you see out there, Skippy?
A whole lot of weirdness. A measurable percentage of the planet's mass has been dispersed into orbit and beyond.
The missing mass is now all nanobots?
Not all of it. There is a lot of plain old dust and ice forming a sphere around the planet, and I am detecting two locations where more dust and nanobots are being flung into orbit even now. The entity in control of this world has constructed mass drivers, at least two of them.
That makes sense. It is a much more efficient method of launching nanobots into orbit.
Where did the ice come from? Were comets moved into orbit?
No. Cometary material is in the Oort cloud, beyond the edge of the quarantine zone. This ice is water from the planet.
Wow, there is a lot of it in orbit.
Why would it shoot water into space? Well, as a shield or something?
That is a partial explanation. Based on the amount of water in the atmosphere, I suspect the controlling entity acted to decrease the overall humidity level on the surface to make conditions more favorable to nanobotic life.
Life? Those things are alive?
Suddenly I felt itchy, like tiny things were crawling on my skin, the way nanobots were stuck to Valkyrie's hull.
They have not attained self-awareness that I know of. However, they do form the entirety of what is equivalent to a biosphere down there.
It is actually a fascinating and remarkable example of geoengineering. The planet's surface has been modified to be nearly optimal for the growth and maintenance of nanotic organisms.
Can you not, I resisted the urge to scratch my itchy arms, say life or organisms, okay? This situation is creepy enough without the images you're putting in my head.
Seriously? Is Whittle Joey afraid of the monster under his bed?
Yes, if that monster's minions fill up half a freaking star system.
I suppose that is a very good point.
Damn it, now I feel itchy.
Okay, one last shield pulse.
The bridge lights flickered.
Done. That fried everything on and around the ship. Colonel Reed, I suggest an immediate course change.
She gestured to the pilot, and on the display the image of the ship turned 5 degrees and decelerated.
Anywho, Skippy continued, as I was explaining, the surface down there is pretty much optimal for, nano-machines. Humidity is low, but not so low that static charge becomes an issue. Temperatures are uniformly cool, and by uniformly, I mean the temperature at the poles is only a few degrees Kelvin from the temperature at the equator.
How the hell is that possible?
That is what I find the most fascinating about this world. Vorvestican used to have an axial tilt of 18.5 degrees. For reference, Earth's axial tilt currently is 23.5 degrees. That is what causes seasonal variation in temperature.
What do you mean, used to have? It changed?
Yes, the current axial tilt here is just under 12 degrees.
How is that possible?
Wait, that asteroid belt. Did the nanocontroller here drop rocks to change the planet's axis?
No, although it surprises me that you thought of something like that.
Well, I'm not stupid, Skippy.
Actually, I had read of something like that in a science fiction novel.
There have been proposals to smash rocks into the planet Venus at the equator to speed up its incredibly slow rotation. A project like that would take many human lifetimes, and as the public on Earth can't stand waiting a week for an episode of their favorite TV show, no long-term project like that is ever going to happen.
We can debate that later.
No, the axis here was adjusted by moving mass around on the surface, specifically by raising the level of some lakes and oceans and dropping the level elsewhere.
That can change the axis of a planet?
Yes, think about it. If you have a spinning basketball covered with coins and you move some coins around, it will change the spin, right?
Yeah, but a planet is a huge thing.
Water has substantial mass and there is a lot of it down there.
Was a lot of it down there. Some of it has been launched into orbit.
The axis here has been modified over thousands of years. The geoengineering is still in progress. I expect it will continue until the axial tilt is zero.
There is still a tilt. How is the temperature so even across the surface?
That is an effect of the dust cloud around the planet. It isn't just passively reflecting sunlight away. It is actively deciding where light should reach the surface and how much. The reflected glow means the night sky receives 60% as much light as the hemisphere that faces the star.
That reduction in the day-night cycle decreases the energy available for creating weather patterns. There are fewer extreme weather events that could damage infrastructure on the surface. The surface layer is also honeycombed with underground chambers. Underground? Like hidden maser cannons? No, I would have warned you about such a threat. Now that I have extended my presence to encompass this world, there is no threat to the ship that I can see. The entity that controls this world is not concerned about conventional external threats. We won't screw with it, and it won't screw with us? Something like that. This is an amazing opportunity to study that. We are not here for science, Skippy. You can geek out about it all you want later. We are here to find the outsider, figure out what it's doing, and stop it. Kill it, if we can. By later, you of course mean some future time when you are too busy to hear all the cool stuff I found here. I will be happy to learn about this place, I told him truthfully. It sounds like an interesting and potentially useful new development in terraforming. Something like this might help us get Avalon up to speed. You monkeys have effed up Avalon so badly I don't know if it will ever be a place anyone wants to live. Well, think about it. Later. For now, can anything you learned about the environment around us help locate that battleship? Actually, yes, but only if it is relatively close to us, within about 2 light seconds. Why so short? Our sensor field can extend farther than that. Interference from dust is one issue. The other is the nanobots are actively pushing back against the sensor field. Bilby and I have been testing the sensor field. It is being distorted in ways that render it useless. So we can launch probes to saturate the area with active sensor pulses. Pulses that will also be distorted, absorbed, and reflected away from us. It might work. I suggest you hold that for now. I am mapping the area. It should be possible for me to find the battleship by the effect it is having on the dust cloud. Anything moving out here should have a bow shock in front and a wake of disturbed particles behind it. Valkyrie is certainly disturbing the dust cloud like a speedboat on a lake. The Conquis should also be leaving a wake. I don't like hearing that, Reed muttered. Is our stealth field effective? It is effectively bending light around us, Skippy answered. It can't do anything about the shockwaves we are creating by flying through the dust at over 14 kilometers per second. Reed shook her head. Escape velocity here is 10.9 kps. We can't reduce speed much or we won't have a margin for getting out of here. I nodded to her. We both know that in space combat, flying slow means being dead. I was just stating an unpleasant fact, Skippy grumbled. I don't know what advice to give you. The rules of space combat are based on space being empty, or very nearly so. This environment is more similar to atmospheric combat. Speed kills, Reed said under her breath. She referenced something pilots are taught about atmospheric flight in a combat environment. Flying at high speed negates the effectiveness of projecting a stealth field around the aircraft. Your aircraft can be detected by the shockwave of compressed air called a supersonic boom, or just by heated air from the friction of your aircraft boring a hole through the atmosphere. In air combat, you want to fly slowly until it is time to drop stealth and start tangling with enemy aircraft. Postponing the moment you have to drop stealth can give you a major advantage. That was all great advice for pilots flying aircraft. It didn't do much for us in a starship zipping through space that was supposed to be almost empty. I don't like this, I said what Reed was thinking. She tapped her chin while she thought. Drop off sensor drones here, then jump away a short distance to reassess? That's the smart move, I agreed. Skippy, could you... Wait! He held up a hand. This is weird. I don't like weird. What's happening? The nanocloud around us, it... That is odd. Why is it... Oh, no. No, 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 no! Shit! We are enveloped in a damping field! Damping... Where is it coming from? The most likely source of a damping field was the Spider battleship. If we could track the field to its origin, we could target that ship, take it out of the fight, kill the source of the field that was preventing us from forming a stable jump wormhole. Nowhere. It has to be coming from nowhere in particular. It is all around us. The nanobots are projecting the field. I can try to... Incoming! The ship shook from a direct hit. We had taken 4 railgun impacts on the port side aft. 2 more darts ripped through the dust under Valkyrie's belly, just missing our shields there. That was accurate shooting. Too accurate. The 4 darts had struck the same shield, temporarily knocking the projector offline. The display showed Bilby was compensating by extending coverage from other shields while the overloaded unit recovered. The ship also began rolling so the port side would be away from the direction the darts had come from. The pilot didn't wait for an order from Reed. He slewed the ship around, continuing the spin that had been induced by the impacts. The force of four darts had been absorbed by the energy field, but part of the kinetic energy had transferred down into Valkyrie's structural frames and pushed the aft end of the ship to starboard. The nose swung around and the throttles surged, accelerating us in a new direction. We were not flying in anything resembling a straight line, jinking up, down, left, right, randomly. The guidance inputs from the pilot interpreted by Bilby as overall direction, while the ship's AI applied random course corrections. Being under acceleration compromised our stealth, except in the dust cloud we were leaving a bow shock and a wake behind us anyway. We needed speed, and Fireball knew it. She had trained her people well. Speed would cause each random course correction to move us farther off a predictable path. Speed would get us up and away from the planet, the thick part of the dust cloud, and out of the damping field. Speed gave us options. Before I could open my mouth to give unwanted advice, the crew, or Bilby on his own, expanded the stealth field. The stealth effect would be less effective, but it covered a large area. The enemy couldn't know where the ship was inside the field. Three more impacts told me that wasn't true. Ah, shit. Both salvos of darts had struck aft, aimed at the same target, our jump drive capacitor packs. A single dart there could unleash energy that would destroy the ship in a flash. A dart would have to get through the shields, then punch through multiple levels of very tough armor. Ordinarily, that was unlikely to happen. Valkyrie would have to be crippled and unable to move, or the enemy would have to be very lucky, or very good, or was cheating. Bilby, discharge the capacitors now, I ordered. Do it.
Aye, dude.
He didn't hesitate or question me. Dump in power now. Reed glanced at me in shock that I had ordered such an extreme measure and that I had bypassed her authority. I have a bad feeling about this, I explained. She bit her lip and gave a curt nod, unhappy, but not yet willing to argue in front of the crew. On the display, we saw the aft end of the ship lit up like 100 strobe lights as the stored capacitor energy was dumped overboard. Energy that was capable of creating a rip in the fabric of spacetime. It was not like getting simply zapped by a frayed electric cord in your house. The dust cloud around us glowed, instantly boiling into plasma. Pilot, pedal to the metal, maximum military thrust. I issued the order directly, taking command of the ship, temporarily. We didn't have time for me to explain what I suspected was going on. Get us out of here. Bilby used that plasma cloud to mask us from enemy sensors.
That plasma will only last a few seconds after the venting is complete, he warned. Capacitors are drained.
Empty. That's done it.
Sir, Reed cleared her throat. The new virtual capacitors will take 17 minutes to build up power for a full jump, I know. She wasn't confident I was familiar with the specs for the newly upgraded battlecruiser. I did know, because despite my reputation, I didn't spend all my downtime playing video games. Dumping the jump power means we can't get instantly out of here if we find a gap in the damping field. It also means we might survive long enough to get to the edge of the field. On the display, the angry orange shading of the damping field aft of the ship was weak, where the nanobots had all been converted into plasma, but that was literally behind us now. The ship was plowing through an untouched part of the field. We couldn't form a jump wormhole even if we had built up sufficient energy. Skippy, the outsider is using a data feed from the nanobots to target us?
Why do you think—
He gasped.
You're right. How did you know that?
We took two salvos exactly where they could hurt us most from a range long enough that we can't detect the enemy ship. No one is that good, or that lucky. The outsider is cheating. It manipulated the nanobots to act as an extended sensor suite and to create a damping field.
I have a bad feeling about this, I repeated.
Reed nodded again, understanding. Sorry, I said to her. There wasn't time for—
Sir, don't ever delay an action to spare my feelings.
She made a face like she'd just bitten into a lemon. Leaning toward me, she added,
We've been through some serious shit together.
We have. Hey, dude? Bilby called for my attention. And dude-ess, what's next? Like, literally, where do we go from here?
Reed had an answer ready. We need airspeed and altitude.
She reverted to using atmospheric pilot terms, which were actually appropriate given the environment.
Maneuvering speed to keep us from being an easy target, and distance from the planet so we can leave this dust cloud behind. Bilby set a least time course to get us to the edge of the damping field.
Like, I don't know where that is. From what I can see, there is no edge.
How can that be? I asked. The field strength must drop off farther from the planet.
Skippy, do you concur with Bilby?
Yes, darn it, he is correct. The field strength does not decrease significantly with distance from the inner layer of the dust cloud. Joe, I have a very bad feeling about this. I hate to say this, but I now think the inner star system here is a trap and has been for a very long time. The outsider might be working with the nanocontroller here, but the capability of projecting a pervasive damping field can't be anything new. It was designed into the nanobots. The outsider got lucky that capability existed when we jumped in here, or we...
Oh, shit, he groaned.
It didn't get lucky, did it?
No. Oh, I am such a gullible idiot.
I was as disgusted with myself as he was with himself.
Correction, I was more disgusted. I should have known better.
You and me both.
Sir, Reed prompted me, would you share what you're thinking?
The outsider didn't come here seeking a weapon to use against us. The quarantine zone is a weapon. Somehow it understood the capabilities of the nanobots here, and it lured us in.
Why?
For Skippy. It wants to kill or neutralize Skippy, and I served up our best asset on a silver platter.
Reed drew her lips in a tight line. She had seen me screw up before, screw up big time.
This fight isn't over yet. She addressed that remark more to her crew than to me.
We still... Incoming, Bilby warned. Missiles, 8 of them. No, 10. Holy, they're coming in from the opposite direction. How...
His next words were drowned out in the sizzling chatter of the point defense system cannons. Not the rapid pulsing bzz-bzz of the usual masers that fired first, but the lower and more ominous barking crack-crack-crack sound of the railgun mini-cannons that launched guided projectiles. That sound was ominous because those Gatling cannons had a short, effective range. Everyone aboard Valkyrie knew if we heard that sound, we were already in deep shit. So why was Bilby relying on...
Oh, that wasn't good. I knew that answer. The dust cloud scrambled our sensors so badly that our ship's AI hadn't detected the missiles until they were almost on top of us, and the dust would disperse and possibly even reflect back any directed energy pulses. Bilby had known that our masers might be useless, so he waited until the missiles were in range of the mini-cannons. Skippy often says my monkey brain is incredibly slow, but all those thoughts raced through my mind during the less than a second from when we heard the PDS railguns barking to when the ship was struck by a hammer. Thor's hammer. Bam! Later, we realized the shields on the aft dorsal section had been struck by 3 atomic compression warheads with their yields dialed up to 11. That was 193 kilotons per warhead, and 3 missiles had slipped through our point defense cannon fire to impact the energy shields and detonate. Missile warheads can be scrambled and rendered ineffective on contact with a shield, so missile warheads deploy a long spike in front that encounters the shield first. When the molecules of that spike begin to disassociate, a signal is sent to the missile's AI, and it detonates the warhead while it still can. 2 shield projectors there took 3 shotgun blasts to their heads, and the overlapping energy fields there were shredded. We got lucky. Lances of ultra-dense exotic matter were blasted forward, launched by the release of atomic compression. 1 fragment penetrated all the way to the inner layer of armor, which was a gel designed to contain solid shrapnel, not the superheated plasma the lances turned into when their tips contacted the outer layer of armor.
Whoa. If Valkyrie's armor had not been upgraded, if the original armor had not been melted by Elder weapons so Skippy could learn how to make armor much tougher than before, we would have been fucked. The plasma jet of that lance would have burst inward from the armor's inner layer like super hot pellets from a shotgun shell, ripping that section of the ship apart from the inside. The structural frames probably would have survived, most of them, but everything else in that section of the unprotected pressure hull would have been shredded. Power conduits, data relays, missile batteries, additional shield projectors, all offline. People there would have been churned into charred powder. There is no question that Valkyrie is a tough ship. We took the equivalent of 3 nukes, and the ship could still fly and fight. We got lucky. It didn't feel like luck at the time. With my ears still ringing and my brain rattled with what had to be a mild concussion, I blinked to focus my eyes on the main display. 2 shields were down, offline hard.
Bilby had rolled the ship to protect us from a potential double tap of railgun darts seeking to strike where the missiles had knocked back our shield coverage.
"Hey, like," Bilby drawled, "I can extend other shields to cover the damaged section, but they're gonna be like paper thin, dude. We can't take another hit there."
"How the f—" I bit my lip, took a breath. "Don't shoot the messenger," I reminded myself.
"Where did those missiles come from? Does the Outsider have another ship out there?"
"No way, General Dude. I recognize the signatures of those missiles and warheads. They're Rindaloo, no question about it. The missiles are all from a batch that was unloaded to the Spider battleship Conquise. The missile drives didn't light off until we were close, you know? They didn't come from anywhere, they were already there. My guess is that ship dropped off clusters of missiles in the dust cloud."
"Fuck!" Reed exploded. "We are flying through a minefield?"
"Yeah, a really gnarly minefield, like one where the mines don't wait for you to step on them. They go out and find targets."
"That's not even the worst news," Skippy sighed. "I suspect the nanobot data feed is not just reporting our position, course, and speed. They are providing sensor data on the ship's condition. The section of the ship where those missiles struck is not the obvious place they would have been targeted. The missiles had to curve around in a steep turn and approach at an unfavorable angle.
They chose their impact points because those missiles knew our shield projectors there were already strained by extending coverage over the capacitor banks."
Reed and I shared a look. We wouldn't survive unless the tactical situation changed to at least even the odds.
"I got nothing," she whispered. She wasn't just telling me there was no obvious solution to our dilemma. She was giving me the okay to make her look bad in front of her crew by dreaming up a creative idea. More, she was asking me to do that. Reed was a great pilot and an outstanding starship captain. Thinking way outside the box was my wheelhouse.
"Skippy, whatever you gotta do, kill that nanobot data feed. We are blind while the enemy has a perfect view of the tactical situation. That is unsat."
"Hey, I'm not happy about it either. This damage will not buff right out."
"I can try." "Bullshit." I gave him a knife hand. "Jedi trainees try. Skippy the Magnificent just fucking does it."
"Hey, I don't see you doing anything about it, Master Yogurt."
"Just—" I flicked a hand.
Did, he sputtered. "Did you just hand wave me? Do you think any of this is easy?"
"I think all of it is harder than my poor monkey brain can possibly imagine, which is why we are all trusting the awesomeness." I gave a thumbs up and looked around the bridge. The crew, including Reed, mimicked my hand signal. Some were more genuine in their trust than others.
"Ugh," he groaned.
"I mean, if the nanoscale brain of a freaking bot can beat you, then—"
"Oh, ho, ho, it is on. I will make you eat your words, Joe."
"I will happily eat those words on Wonder Bread with a nice thick layer of fluff after you make it happen. My life has never sucked as much as it does right now."
"Then it can only get better from here. Do something. I'm doing it. In the meantime, may I make a suggestion?"
"Please do. Launch a half dozen missiles armed with nukes. Instruct them to fly in formation with us. The next time we encounter a cluster of incoming missiles, we will detonate our nukes in the enemy flight path. Scramble their sensors."
"Nukes, Skippy?" Reed asked for clarity. "Not atomic compression—"
"Nukes," he insisted. "Crude fusion bombs that monkeys made by bashing coconuts together. We need a strong electromagnetic pulse and lots of hard radiation that will contaminate the whole area."
Reed issued the appropriate orders, and within seconds, six deadly dots joined the outline of Valkyrie on the tactical section of the display.
My head was beginning to throb. The ship's entire complement should have visited sickbay to get checked and treated for concussions. Five people were in sickbay, I could see from the stats on the display. No injuries were flagged as life-threatening. That didn't mean they weren't serious. Maintenance bots were crawling on and under the hull, repairing damage as best they could, though many of them had to wait for the armor plating to cool. Still, Skippy did nothing, as far as I could see.
"Skippy?
What?"
he snapped.
"Whenever it's convenient, it would be great if you actually did something."
"Oh, you."
Tapping a thumb on the audio app of my phone, I played the Jeopardy theme song, and I whistled along with it.
Oh, Skippy raged.
"You make me so mad I could—"
"Mad enough to actually do something?"
"I am working on it. The—"
"Incoming,"
Bilby warned, and eight red dots appeared on the display. A cluster of enemy missiles had just gone hot.
Whatever you gotta do, I thumped my armrest. Do it right fucking now. Okay, but I'm warning you.
He didn't finish whatever he was going to say. The enemy missiles were streaking toward us, jinking wildly, making it difficult for the PDS sensors to track because those missiles had their active sensors switched off while our active sensor pulses were being bent and reflected by the nanobot cloud. The missiles didn't have to send out sensor pulses. They were guided by a feed from all the nanobots around us.
Light off nukes 4 and 6, Skippy urged.
Quickly!
Reed gestured to the weapons officer, and two darts bloomed into fireballs that momentarily blanked out the display. Gripping the arms of my chair, I waited for the sensor view to reset. The pilots had not wasted the opportunity. They had the ship decelerating hard and slewing around so our nose pointed toward the enemy missiles.
Sending out coded sensor pulse now, Skippy muttered. Let's hope this works. I can't see where... Yes! They missed!
He highlighted the enemy missiles, now only 5 of them, showing they had flown past us and were now turning and burning to catch up. Except they weren't burning. They were instead loitering in our wake, confused.
Ha! You're not so tough without spies giving you a target, are you? Skippy crowed. Okay, the nanobot data feed is shut down.
Great. Can you also do something about the damping field? I asked, fully expecting him to tell me that would be no problemo and my only job would be finding an acceptable way to praise him.
No can do, sorry. I can't interfere with the damping field, darn it.
What?
Why not?
The phrase, can't you just, came dangerously close to being spoken and that should never happen.
The only way to shut that field down is to destroy the Conquis.
That made no sense to me. You just told us the ability for generating a damping field is native to the nanobots. Why would destroying the battleship...
The worst part of my job is explaining the most simple things to you. Yes, numbskull, the nanobots were built to generate a damping field, and the sensor feed is also a native function. The outsider tapped into that sensor feed to track and target us. I shut off the feed at the source since I couldn't instruct the battlefield to stop tapping into the feed. Wait,
I blurted out before I got distracted and lost my train of thought. Can we tap into that feed to find the Conquis?
No, darn it. The outsider got here first and altered the protocols to lock me out of doing exactly that. This was a carefully planned ambush that you jumped us into.
My memory of the events was different. There wasn't any point and no time to argue with him. I'm terribly sorry about the mess I got you into. Okay, so no data feed. What about the damping field?
As you mentioned, that is also a native function. From what I am able to determine, the outsider hasn't hacked into the nanoswarm and ordered it to project a damping field. The nanobots are doing that on their own. Or, more likely, their controller entity has instructed the swarm to prevent us from jumping away.
Why just us? Did the outsider give it a nice fruit basket and now it's best friends with the nanocontroller?
They are not friends, Dum-Dum. That battleship also can't jump away. Although I don't know where that ship is, I can detect that the damping field covers a broad area.
Well, yes, but it left clusters of missiles out here, so the Conquis could actually be far away from us and, hey, in case you haven't been keeping track of current events, that ship scored 2 direct hits with line-of-sight railguns, he snapped.
Even with the advantage of the nanobot data feed, the battleship had to be relatively close to shoot that accurately.
Okay, good point. The outsider is also trapped here?
Yes, if you will stop asking stupid questions, I can explain.
Please do.
The damping field activated only after the outsider shot at us. If you remember the sequence of events, I detected a damping field forming, then we were struck by 4 railgun darts. My guess is, and this is a very good informed guess, unlike what you blah 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 about, is the nanobot swarm was either programmed to generate a damping field automatically when it encountered hostile action, or it was instructed to form the field after the controller determined the battleship was hostile.
The controller otherwise would have allowed the battleship to hang around here without being challenged? That can't be right. We know that something in the quarantine zone has been disabling or killing sensor probes.
I realize now the outsider has been transmitting a recognition signal that kept the nanobots from acting against it, until it shot at us and could no longer pretend to be friendly.
That makes sense given what we know. What I didn't say was we didn't know much, so it was impossible to say whether Skippy's theory was correct or not. If the nanobots are acting according to their programming or whatever, how would killing the battleship deactivate the damping field?
It won't, he admitted. Not directly. Listen, Dum-Dum, this is complicated.
I can hack into the nanobots and turn off the damping field, at least in a relatively small area. Hacking into billions of nanobots will take a long time, and I can't hack all of them. The only way I can do it is to be stationary compared to the nanobots around us, so I can hack into a relatively static bubble around us. Right now, we are moving through the nanoclouds so fast, as I hack into each group of nanobots, they fall behind us, and I have to hack into another group. You see the problem? Yeah, shit. To shut down the damping field, we have to stay in one place, but if we do that, we will be an easy target for the outsider. Exactly. Eliminate the battleship, decelerate so we are motionless relative to the local nanocloud, and give me 20, maybe 25 minutes to disable the damping field. All we have to do is find an enemy ship in this cloud where our sensors are pretty much blind and kill a peer adversary. That was a fancy military term meaning a ship nearly as powerful as Valkyrie. Really, I was concerned the Conquest was more than a match for Valkyrie. Our battlecruiser might not be up to the fight. Our armor was the best in the galaxy, but battlecruisers were designed for speed rather than firepower. Battlecruisers were supposed to fight smaller ships, chase down and destroy cruiser squadrons, keep enemy escort ships away from the big battleships. A fight between a battlecruiser and a battleship would be, well, a one-sided bad idea. For reference, Google the battle between the German battleship Bismarck and the British battlecruiser Hood in World War II. Spoiler alert, it didn't end well for the Hood. UN Navy doctrine for battlecruisers encountering enemy battleships is to use superior speed and maneuverability to engage and disengage from the fight as conditions were favorable, to decide when to conduct hit-and-run attacks, to keep out of the battle wagon's effective gun range. War game after war game had proven the wisdom of that doctrine. Now, we had to ignore it. Reet? It was her ship, and she was more current on tactics and ship-handling skills. We are still faster than the Conquest, but we'll have to get close to kill it. Bilby, can you run a simulation of... The lights flickered, went out, and flickered again. Skippy? What the... The lights came on. The main holographic display tank was a featureless black. We had no sensor input, even from inside the ship. We had no control of anything. Oh, that is not good. Skippy, I took a breath. Yelling at him wouldn't make the situation better. Joe, we have a major problem. Bilby is offline. Not offline, exactly. He isn't able to interface with any of the ship's critical systems. Why is... The nanobot swarm is projecting an interference I have never encountered before. It is jamming the higher functions of the substrate that Bilby runs on. Can you do anything about it? Yes, partially. But that will require me to stop jamming the nanobot sensor feed. Do not do that, Reed urged. Yes, keep jamming that feed, I agreed. Okay, I can understand that Bilby is offline. Why aren't we getting any sensor data at all, even internal stuff? Every system aboard this ship runs through Bilby now, after the upgrade, he groaned. That is a major advantage in terms of reaction time, processing speed, integration of systems, and flexibility to shunt control between system for damage control. Now it's screwing us. Can you take over? I have taken over. I am keeping the reactors running and shields operational. Sensor data will be available shortly. Well, you can forget about fighting that battleship. Reed glanced at me before asking, why? He paused, mouth open, reconsidering whatever he had intended to say. Well, the crew will now have to fly and fight the ship manually. I can't help you monkeys like I used to. There will not be a big red button to activate after I set up a firing solution. I'm sorry, but I'm running out of bandwidth. There are too damned many nanobots, and I have to deal with each of them individually. Plus, you know, keep the reactors from exploding. Fireball. I leaned toward her and whispered, what do you think? Is the crew up to the challenge? We do train for manual control. I never thought we would ever run into that scenario. What I'm more concerned about is our tactics are rusty. We don't spend much time training for single-ship combat. Navy doctrine is for ships to fight in formations where every type of ship has a defined role in the squadron or fleet. You have experience with single-ship combat. The last time I was in a single-ship fight was before your children were born, she reminded me. We're up to the challenge. With our speed advantage, we can break off an engagement at any time. The battleship is not what worries me. It isn't? We know that ship's performance specs. We can engage when we have an advantage. What concerns me is what we don't know. Welcome to the Merry Band of Pirates.
Chapter 20.
The deck shook again. That time the shaking was not from enemy action. The display flashed a red icon on the diagram of the ship's structure, showing an overloaded shield generator had sent a power surge back into the distribution system, and a power node buried under the armored hull had exploded. That damage was not from direct enemy action. It still was serious. 67 minutes, according to the clock that tracked the time since we broke off the last engagement. Our engineering team had more than an hour to patch up the ship from our last beating, and we lost another shield generator. The Spider battleship was still out there, and we had learned that it was a tough and mean some bitch. We were slowly losing the battle.
Possible contact,
a crewman monitoring a sensor console warned. Bearing 079er, mark 114. He rattled off the set of numbers, though the bearing was shown on the display. Speaking the contact details aloud was protocol. It assured the crew was aware of the sensor reading and focused on the correct information.
Confidence is...
The lieutenant hesitated.
Low. Confidence is low.
He looked up at Reed apologetically.
Most likely another sensor echo, Colonel. Track it anyway. Yes, ma'am. Designate contact Sierra 147.
147. The 147th possible contact we had detected since we commenced our running battle with the Conquise. A battle that had been non-stop for 33 hours. The crew was exhausted. The ship was wearing down from the strain. Bilby was offline. Skippy was irritated and snapping at everyone. The crew were overtired and snapping at each other, except of course no one was snapping at me. Me, the guy who jumped us into an ambush and then ordered our mighty battlecruiser to slug it out one-on-one with a senior species battleship. A fight where our ship was flown manually by monkeys while the Conquise had a super-advanced energy being in command. The crew should have yelled at me. I would have felt better if they had. Reed's crew certainly now had experience in single-ship combat, though most of what they had learned recently is what not to do. She was right when she mentioned the crew's skills in single-ship combat were rusty, and it wasn't just the crew. It had been a long time since I took a ship into a real one-on-one fight. A battle where the ship wasn't just acting as a platform for Skippy to do some awesome thing. Like guiding a relativistic dart to blast enemy ships into dust, hacking into enemy ships so they couldn't effectively fight, making an enemy ship vibrate itself apart. He couldn't use any of his usual awesomeness against the outsider. His bandwidth was fully tasked by keeping the nanobot swarm from reporting our position and keeping Valkyrie's basic systems operating. The crew had to navigate, fly, and make the ship fight. The crew was doing their absolute best. It wasn't anywhere close to good enough.
Have you ever seen the movie Run Silent, Run Deep? It's about submarines in the Pacific Theater of World War II. I saw that movie with my father when I was about 8 years old on a rainy Saturday afternoon. We were supposed to go out fishing that day, but it was pouring down rain and chilly, so my father decided we guys should watch a guy's movie. Why we chose that one, I don't know. But I enjoyed sitting on the couch with him and our dog, eating popcorn and watching American and Japanese subs fight. The reason I mention that is after the first hour, I realized a sub battle was an excellent way to think about our fight against the Conquise. With both of our ships wrapped in sophisticated stealth fields, we couldn't easily locate each other. Active sensor pings would only give away our own position, while not having a guarantee that our pings would detect the enemy ship. At sea, subs use passive sonar to listen for sounds coming from the enemy sub, vibrations from the engines or propellers, the humming of pumps circulating water to cool the sub's reactor, or some unlucky jackass drops a stack of pots and pans in the galley. In space combat, we use passive sensors to detect traces of chemicals and other particles left behind by enemy ships, tiny pieces of armor flaking away, stray oxygen molecules escaping from imperfectly sealed airlock doors, that sort of thing. We also look for particles of the local solar wind being disturbed by the passage of a large invisible object. At closer range, our instruments can actually detect how the fabric of space-time is being distorted by the mass of a heavy ship. The problem with relying on a gravimetric sensor is once you're close enough to use it, the enemy ship is probably already shooting at your stupid head. Passive sensors are really only useful if you have a lot of time to devote to a search, or if you're able to saturate the battle space with sensor drones to expand the footprint you can cover. Most of the time, passive sensors are useful only when your priority is to avoid the enemy suspecting your ship is in the area. Once the enemy is aware of your presence, it is time to warm up the sensor field projectors. Technically, a sensor field is a type of active search. The difference is a sensor field doesn't send out pulses of photons that travel in a straight line. A straight line leads directly back to your ship, so you can understand why you might not want to do that. In a sensor field, charged particles are projected outward. They loop around and come back to your ship. The field has an irregular shape, and that shape constantly changes. An enemy ship encountering your field will change the shape of the loop, and so you'll know when an object is out there, where it is, and its speed and direction. The enemy will detect your field and know your ship is in the vicinity, but due to the irregular, rapidly changing shape of the field, it won't know exactly where inside the field your ship is. The development of sensor fields changed the nature of space combat. I had found the concept fascinating when I was learning about space combat maneuvers aboard the old Flying Dutchman. In the quarantine zone, the problem was we couldn't rely on passive sensors, active sensor pings, or sensor fields. Everything we had been taught about space combat was mostly useless. We were learning on the job. We couldn't see far enough into the dust cloud to make passive detection useful. Active sensor pulses not only got absorbed by the nanobot swarm, they were reflected and scattered, bouncing the photons around randomly. It was like shooting a gun in a maze. The bullet would go everywhere except in a straight line. The sensor field was better than nothing, but most of the particles were bent out of the loop they were supposed to follow, so we got a lot of false sensor readings. At first, we had thought the field was distorted by the battleship's presence, while really the swarm was just screwing with us. The only good news was our stealth field was effective. The bad news was... well, there was a lot of bad news. The battleship's own stealth field was even better than what the spiders told us to expect. The outsider must have enhanced the performance. Basically, we couldn't find the thing, and it couldn't find us, except somehow it kept doing that over and over and over. The first four engagements, we assumed we had stumbled onto each other, trading shots as we flew past, neither of us shooting with any accuracy. Then it became alarmingly clear the outsider was somehow still tracking us, and its missiles could also track us, at least at a short range. Each time we encountered the Conquis, both ships fired railguns and launched missiles as we zipped past each other. Then we lost contact with the battleship in the dust cloud. But its missiles followed us, and we didn't know how they were keeping contact. It was driving Skippy crazy. "Joe," he sighed, his avatar hovering in front of me while I pushed a cart along a passageway. Engineering teams were working to repair damage all throughout Valkyrie, and since I wasn't qualified to work on any system aboard the rebuilt ship, I made myself useful by bringing coffee, sandwiches, and snacks to the work teams. My cart was piled high with dirty cups, plates, and dishes. When I got back to the galley, I would make a detour to get first aid supplies. Some of the crew working damage control were injured, and they hadn't taken time to get treated in sick bay. The ship had taken a beating in the last encounter with the Conquis. The battleship had come up behind us, moving at only 1,400 meters per second relative speed, and it fired railguns before we detected it. The slow pass at a distance of less than 700 kilometers made the engagement last long enough for the battleship to blast us with four salvos. We managed only two rounds of railguns and directed energy weapons. The missiles we launched chased the enemy, and we detected thermal blooms, but we didn't know if the missiles hit or exploded when they were intercepted by enemy defenses. "Hey, Skippy." I turned left down a passageway, and he kept pace with me. "What's up?" "I've been working on the problem of how that ship keeps finding us." "Hey, yeah, thanks for doing that. I know you're already busy." "And?" "And nothing. I got nothing. Except I am 99% sure that ship isn't tracking us." "The outsider is doing it?" "How?" "It must be doing it. I have no freaking clue how. This is another demonstration of it having an ability beyond my own. He sighed again. "Thought I was the most awesome being in the galaxy, but I am only the most awesome being in this galaxy. I was all happy until that asshole crashed the party." "Yeah, but can it sing better than you?" "Dude, please," he snorted. "As if." "So you got that going for you. If the outsider would agree to a musical talent competition, we would have a chance in this fight. The devil lost a fiddle contest, so let's not count on that happening, okay?" probably a good idea. You keep working on it? I will. He sounded so depressed, I felt the need to say something to not cheer him up, to console him. Hey, Skippy, listen. Don't blame yourself for this mess. Yes, the outsider may have some cool superpowers, but your awesomeness is unmatched. Oh, thank you, Joe. I was not blaming myself. That's good. Clearly this is all your fault. That's not quite what you flew us into an ambush. Another ambush. I mean, that is kind of your thing. Hey, I didn't really, now that I think about it, the outsider lured us in here because it must have studied your career and understood that you have fallen for ambushes so often, it was a very safe bet you'd do it again. You ass. Our second mission, we got jumped by a squadron of Therenan destroyers, and I had to perform a miracle to get us out of the mess you got us into. Your supposed miracle broke the ship, Skippy. Ah, it only mostly broke the ship. We jumped into another ambush in the Roach Motel. We did that because you assured me it would be safe. Then there was the incident of getting trapped by a Maxalx task force in the Snow Cone star system. Okay, so yes, that elder AI you called Echo came very close to tearing Valkyrie apart, until I did yet another of my, you know, usual miracles. Hey, if you're so freaking miraculous, do it again and get us out of here. I didn't get us stuck in this mess. Besides, it's obvious the outsider chose this site for an ambush because it understood conditions here would cancel out many of my abilities. That would not have been a problem, except that you walked us right into the trap. Why do you have to... Ah, shit. I leaned back against the bulkhead. Okay, you're right. The outsider had been 10 steps ahead of us the whole time. It knows that to stop it, we have to know what it's planning to do, and for that, we need to find it. Wherever it goes, it knows we will try to follow. That makes it easy for it to set up an ambush. We don't have a choice. We have to take the risk of chasing it. There. I closed my eyes. There has to be a better way to find the thing and maintain surveillance. That's what we need to think about. You mean after you find a way to get us out of here? Yeah. You got any ideas about that? I got nothing. Heads up. Commander Gasquet is on the way here to talk with you. Why? Ask him yourself. The avatar disappeared as Gasquet came around the corner and waved to me. Admiral, Colonel Reed sent me to see if you need anything. The guy looked tired. We were all tired, and that situation wasn't about to improve anytime soon. He was tired, but also alert and focused, as much as any of us were. Personally, I had managed to get maybe 3 hours of sleep in the past 41 hours, and none of my naps had been longer than 20 minutes. Most of the time, I had been on the bridge and pretty much useless. The uncomfortable fact was I was no longer rated to captain the ship. So all I could do was provide advice and support to whoever was the duty officer. Back in the day, I had been rated to act as captain, as a pilot when needed, as a weapons officer, to run navigation, communications, sensors, to stand a watch at every bridge console other than engineering. Now, after years of me playing golf and the ship having gone through an extensive refit, I just wasn't familiar enough with the new Valkyrie, and no one wanted me touching anything. Gasquet. I smiled to let him know I wasn't about to bite his head off. We both know that's bullshit. Why are you really here? He didn't blink. To see how you're doing, sir. The Colonel is concerned you are pushing yourself too hard. She is concerned about me pushing myself? When is the last time she got some sleep? He glanced at his watch. 6 hours ago, when you ordered her to go to her cabin. My recollection is we got jumped again by the Conquise about 40 minutes after she left the bridge, so we both know she got zero sleep. She had 40 minutes to rest and get some rack time, but instead she took a shower and changed uniform. She wants to set a good example, sir. Not walking around like a zombie would be a good example. I'll talk with her. The tension went out of his shoulders. We would all appreciate that. Is there anything else I need to know? We had a solid sensor contact 10 minutes ago. We would have considered it just another echo, but now we recognize it was probably a cluster of missiles. We're learning. Not fast enough, sir. Where the hell is that battleship getting so many missiles? He asked. There can't be a supply ship nearby.
Even if there was, it hasn't had time between engagements to rendezvous with another ship.
The Spiders told us the Conquest disappeared along with all of its escorts. My guess is the Outsider discarded the dropships it doesn't need and stuffed the docking bays with missiles from the escort ships that it captured. It jumped into the quarantine zone with a maximum loadout. That provided plenty of ordnance to create a minefield. He nodded.
That's the Colonel's thinking also.
So tell me, why did Reed really send you here? He was uncomfortable enough to swallow. His Adam's apple bounced up and down. When I first came aboard the ship, I didn't know the guy enough to decide whether he was a good XO or not. More to the point, was he good enough to be the executive officer of Valkyrie? His ratings had all been solid, but those evals were of his performance in peacetime, when the mighty battlecruiser was only flying around showing the flag. What I had needed to know was whether he could be a great XO, worthy of joining Task Force Black as a merry pirate. Since those early days, I had an answer. Yes, Gasquet was smart, inventive, flexible, he worked his ass off, and most importantly, Reed trusted him. He looked me straight in the eye.
She didn't send me, sir. Permission to speak freely?
There's no point to listening if you're just gonna bullshit me, so consider speaking freely to be a standing order.
The crew doesn't need you handing out coffee and donuts. We need you in your office, or the gym, or taking a shower, or doing whatever the hell I hear that you do when a crazy idea pops into your head. An idea to get us out of this mess, because we are not going to fight our way out.
He took a breath and added,
Sir.
Okay. I pushed the cart gently toward him.
Okay.
He blinked. You're right. I just finished having the same conversation with Skippy. Besides, I waved at the empty plates and dirty coffee cups. This crew was stingy with tips.
Oh, he laughed and patted his pockets. I left my wallet in my cabin. That's what everyone told me.
I'll go to my office. You can leave this cart in the galley. The alarms blared. According to my phone, it was 77 minutes since we last broke off contact. Now the Conquest was back. Gasquet turned to run back to the bridge.
We really need that idea, sir.
The deck shook again. I sat down heavily in my office chair. The display on the bulkhead opposite my chair was showing battle damage throughout the ship, and a list of casualties. So far, we had been relatively lucky. No deaths, 8 seriously injured. So far. That happy situation was unlikely to continue. The harsh truth was we were getting our asses kicked. No starship flown and operated manually by meat sacks could beat a ship controlled by a being with lightning-fast processing speed. The Outsider had been finding us every 57 to 83 minutes, no more, no less. On average. No, I should talk about the mean, not the average. If you exclude the first 3 of our encounters after Skippy shut down the data feed, and the one time we stupidly turned around shortly after the Conquest delivered another beatdown, that battleship showed up on our tail every 67 to 75 minutes. According to the clock that counted up from when we broke away from the last engagement and ran as best we could, we had another hour and 2 minutes before railgun darts would be slamming into our shields and missiles would be following close behind. That was if we didn't stumble into another cluster of missiles that had been planted as a minefield. Valkyrie couldn't take much more abuse. Our ship advantage was gone. Several of the main engines shot full of holes. Skippy estimated the battleship was actually a bit faster than our ship now, and while we had scored hits, Valkyrie was faring worse in the battle. What we should have done was run for the edge of the quarantine zone when we realized a damping field had us trapped. I hadn't ordered that option because I had feared the Outsider expected us to do the obvious and had planned a nasty surprise if we ran away. Now we couldn't run. The engines couldn't sustain full thrust for more than 12 minutes without something breaking. 1 hour, 1 minute to our next beatdown. Maybe our last.
Skippy, this ain't working, I said as I leaned the chair back and closed my eyes.
I will not bother to dispute the obvious. Joe, I have been wargaming the... you probably should close your door. I pressed the button and waited for the green light to glow. That bad? It couldn't be worse. No matter what we do, we are going to lose this battle of attrition. We can lose quickly and get it over with as painlessly as possible,
Or we can drag out the fight until the ship is crippled and the outsider can do whatever it wants, including capturing me. That's not happening. Unless you didn't understand what I just said, it will not happen. Okay, is this where, as a friend, I'm supposed to tell you some happy bullshit to make you feel better about our inevitable defeat and demise? No? Then I don't see how we can even survive, forget about winning. I don't see it either. Yet. Skippy, you always remind us to trust the awesomeness, right? Wiser advice was never given, yes. You need to trust that the impossible is merely a temporary obstacle to clever monkeys. You do want a bullshit pep talk. No, I do not. What I want is for you to ditch your negative attitude. Like that is gonna help. It is. It always helps, you dumb shit. What? He screeched. How dare you? I should use your ginormous brain to analyze this, please. When faced with an impossible situation, have we ever failed to find a way out of it? No, but that doesn't mean past performance is no guarantee of future success. Yeah, I read the legal terms. That is bullshit, Skippy. 100% pure bullshit. We have always found a way to do the impossible. Apparently you do not understand basic math, dum-dum. Right. I rolled my eyes. We have always succeeded, but this time is different. It is different. Joe, we no longer have the probability field working in our favor. We never did. Excuse me? You heard me. That stupid field did not put ideas into my head. It didn't tell me to jump the ship through a freaking elder wormhole. Hey, numbskull, I jumped the ship through that wormhole. Yes, but I had to create an entirely new branch of mathematics to even crunch the numbers for programming the jump drive. It was my idea.